Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Well, here's something you probably didn't think about today: data centers. But they probably have a lot to do with your work and your life, and a Chicago alderman is spearheading an effort to give them an even greater connection to Chicago. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. When you're on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop computer and store data in the so-called cloud, it does not go to anything remotely cloud-like. The data have to be stored in brick-and-mortar buildings filled with high-tech equipment. And 36th Ward Alderman Gilbert Villegas wants more of those buildings and a lot more of the data here in Chicago. Alderman Villegas is a former Marine who now chairs the City Council Committee on Economic Capital and Technology Development, and he is proposing a measure that would add some requirements for companies storing data from Chicago. And Gil Villegas, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Craig. Thanks for having me, and thank you for covering this topic.
Well, it's an important one. Your proposed ordinance is called Data Residency Requirements for City Data. Well, why don't I let you explain what that means and what the ordinance would do?
No, absolutely. Well, again, thank you, Craig. So this ordinance takes advantage of an asset which we have, which is called data. So we have we pay hyperscalers like Amazon, Google, Oracle. We pay them to store our data. But there's not a requirement as to where they store it. And so the ordinance does a couple of things. Number one, it talks about best practices of storing data in the United States. Internet is worldwide, and what we want to do is make sure that our data is stored in the United States of America, number one. Number two, it provides an incentive for those hyperscalers to store data here locally within the state of Illinois and within the city of Chicago. So what we're doing is trying to encourage development of these data centers within the state of Illinois, but preferably within the city of Chicago, so we can do two things. We can help develop blighted areas or areas that have swaths of land that have gone undeveloped for a long time, and then bringing those data centers and putting them on the tax roll so we can create new revenue based off property tax. that these buildings will sit on. So we're doing two things, using data as our asset to get the revenue. And then we're providing an incentive for that. So it's not like we're telling folks to, you know, build these facilities without type of incentive. We're providing an incentive because we know that this data is valuable. And we would never allow construction to take place without having local participation. We wouldn't allow other things to occur without having some type of local participation. And what we're seeing is that this practice is happening in Europe. And so what we're doing is just mirroring what Europe's doing. We're mirroring what Loudoun County, Virginia is doing, where they've seen their property tax revenue go from $100 million to $1 billion based off the construction of these data centers.
And let me make sure, just clarify here, because the way the ordinance reads, you did specify, but it sounds like the only requirement is that the data be stored in the United States. And everything above that, whether it comes to the state of Illinois or Chicago, it's basically a credit, right?
Correct.
So how does that credit work?
Yeah, so what happens is, we will procure the services of data storage. And if a hyperscaler wants to take advantage of the incentives, what they'll do is they'll store it within the state of Illinois or the city of Chicago. And what we're trying to do is create this market that there is an incentive tied to it. So it's 2% for the state of Illinois, 4% for the city of Chicago. Once that contract has expired and we put out another RFP for storage of data, those folks that have taken advantage of the incentives will then have the ability to leverage that incentive for their next procurement. So they'll be able to capture the 4% if it's in the city of Chicago or 2% in the state of Illinois in order to outbid the second low bidder if they're a little higher.
Now, we're joined by another guest. He's Craig Huffman. He's the co-founder of Metro Edge. I believe that is the only Black-owned data center developer in Chicago. And Craig Huffman, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And now, is this a growth industry? You know, we know that these centers exist, but I don't think people know much about them. So what is happening in this industry? Why would anyone want to be a developer?
Absolutely. Great question. You probably will find that you're hearing a lot more about data centers. The pandemic accelerated the adoption of new technologies. But to answer your question, data centers are the hottest real estate investment asset type in the world. There's a reason why some of the largest private equity investment firms such as KKR, Blackstone are pursuing these investments. It partly relates to the fact that retail has slowed down, office, certainly in Chicago, has slowed down, and other real estate investment types.
So what kind of buildings are good for this? Explain what's inside these buildings.
Absolutely. So first and foremost, you can't just put a data center anywhere. Some of the opposition has tried to say, well, you don't want a data center next to a school. We agree. You don't want a data center next to certain kind of uses. What goes into a data center is a lot of equipment, very expensive equipment that's used to transmit data, right? I compare it to an airport. The runway allows airplanes to take off. It allows airplanes to land. And so when you think of it that way, the building really houses the connectivity that allows the whole network that becomes the internet, becomes email, becomes all the things that we use to really be connected. And so as a result, you know, this is now part of the infrastructure that we all depend upon. We're using a data center right now to conduct this interview. And I'm sure if you're using your smartphone, you're also using a data center. So this is interwoven into all aspects of our life. We just don't realize it, because it's the back-end infrastructure that supports what we all are so dependent on.
Before I ask anything else, why wouldn't you want it near a school?
Yeah, I think it comes down to zoning. I mean, industrial real estate is typically sites that are zoned for industrial. So think of where our manufacturing, our businesses used to be. These are properties that historically have been designed with a single purpose, not to be aesthetically pleasing. Although what you're beginning to see now, as you look at urban data centers, they look more like office buildings. And, you know, more importantly, on the point you made, to determine where a data center goes, you can't easily put a data center in a high density area. Why is that? Because you need access to power. You also need fiber. And ideally, you want to be in a place that is not going to be disruptive to a community.
I want to bring Alderman Villegas back in. And now at this point, we're talking to both of you. But Alderman, what kind of a pushback are you getting from your colleagues on the city council? I know you've got a one of your committee meetings coming up this week on Wednesday, but there are some concerns.
Yeah, so I think the concerns are from the fact that the original ordinance was just a little confusing. So what we did was we worked closely with the administration to make it easier to comprehend and take a look at what is it that we're currently doing so that way it's in line. Initially, the ordinance had 6%, 8% as of an incentive. Some of my colleagues were confused about that. So I had the procurement department give us some language that made it a lot easier, which is in line with other incentives that we provide for other contracts. So we did that. Number two, we had an issue, some concerns around the environment. And so the city of Chicago, the sustainability officer has worked in the past with the Department of Planning to put forward recommendations around new development, inclusive of data centers, to make sure that we're taking into account the environment and sustainability. So in this ordinance, you'll see section two, which talks about the creation of a sustainability interdepartmental working group, so that way we can continue to build off the sustainability measures that we put forward through the Department of Planning in conjunction with the sustainability officer. So this is, again, this ordinance will continue to evolve as technologies evolve, as we get cleaner energy. Those things will be taken into consideration as we move forward with developing these data centers.
Yeah, and Craig Huffman, let's talk a little bit about energy, because I think people would assume that these kinds of facilities draw a lot of power. And you can tell me if they also, have any kind of output, if there's either heat coming off of them, or what are the environmental concerns? What are the energy consumption concerns?
Yeah, well, as it relates to Chicago, ComEd has done a phenomenal job. ComEd actually exports power to neighboring states. And so you first have to start, is your grid in a good place? On the East Coast with Dominion and certain other providers, that's not been the case. But more importantly, yes, you do need power. And so one of the interesting things about the site that I'm looking to develop, it's been vacant for 40 years. If you go back in the history of the Illinois Medical District, at one point in time, what now is a district with some of the largest hospitals was comprised of homes. And these homes, while they didn't use a lot of power individually, there was a lot of density that when you add up. And so why is that relevant? Because that once those homes were demolished to create the medical district, you literally had power that went dormant because it became vacant land. And so one of the pieces is you need to be able to put a data center in a location that won't disrupt other users, which means the ComEd looks and says, hey, we can provide 20 megawatts, 50 megawatts, while also providing the level of service that all of the other users need in the community. And, you know, as far as heat, you know, look, in Chicago, we're all looking for heat when it comes to January, right? The idea is, the other good news about data centers is that they have evolved and become very environmentally friendly in terms of the design, looking at ways, you know, even if you look at the Psi Quantum on the far southeast side, that's quantum computing. It's going to use a technology that will influence data centers that ultimately will be less reliant on power. And so what's fascinating about that development, that's the future of what data centers will look like. And what we're seeing a flash of is they're probably going to use less power. So some of the issues that we're beginning to talk about are short-term versus long-term. But more importantly, again, ComEd is an exporter. So as it relates to Chicago and the regions that ComEd oversees, it's not a problem, right? We've heard people saying, are my lights going to flicker? The answer is no.
But let me ask another concern that it just occurred to me as I was doing the research for this. Is there any concern that data centers could be terrorist targets. And in fact, and that, what made me think of that is I was looking at a center that's in Europe that Google uses, and there's a big sign on it that says Google Cloud in front of the building.
Well,
it seems to me that if someone wanted to disrupt a network, they might. I mean, how high is security would you need on a facility like that?
It's a great question, but I'll tell you, the word you just used, cloud, is a key. The cloud is comprised of many data centers, oftentimes a cluster. So if one goes down, there's redundancy. There's backup, right? That's the beauty. If you go back 10, 15 years, yes, a bomb goes off, blows up your data center, you're out of luck. Today, with groups like Amazon, Google, some of the largest hyperscalers in the world, this has been solved. You know, even with this ordinance, we have said, look, we're saying some of the data should be, but we're not going to tell, the ordinance is not going to tell Google or others how to run their business. We're just saying there's an economic development component associated with the building that is part of a network that makes the cloud. Mm-hmm. And as it relates to City of Chicago contracts, we think, we know the city certainly needs to think about revenue with the budget deficit looming. And this is a way to do it. And it's a way to do it without fines, fees, taxes, and harm to residential property owners or commercial property owners. A rising tide lifts all boats. So our belief is at a time when office is difficult to get done, retail is difficult to get done, there's a reason why data centers are being invested in. Let's ride the winning hand and promote economic development, particularly for areas that haven't seen it inside Chicago, and leveraging the data that residents, frankly, comes from the residents, and the money that pays these contracts comes from residents as well.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and we're talking about the push for data centers in Chicago and why they could matter to you. My guests are Chicago Alderman Gilbert Villegas, who chairs the City Council Technology Committee, and Craig Huffman, whom you just heard there, the founder and CEO of Metro Edge, a development company. Gil Villegas, before we get into the economic development parts of this, do you have any concern about something that Craig Huffman talked about or touched on, and that is how these data centers look? Because certainly the earliest ones look like big concrete boxes and very few design elements, and they just look like, like I said, big blocks of concrete.
Yeah.
Do you worry about the aesthetics of these things going up?
No, I don't, because there would be some zoning changes that are required. And so it'll be collaboration with the aldermen as well as the community if they decide to move forward with locating a data center within their wards. So, technology continues to evolve. And so what you've seen is the initial, square box, but there's been a lot of redesigns to make it more aesthetic and make it look like a fabric of the community that it's in. Again, that's the right. outside is, it's just a building with servers inside. That's what a data center is. And so if the alderman or woman decides, hey, I'd like to have the outside be brick to match the aesthetics of the community, that can be something that's required. But I'm not concerned about that, because there'll be a lot of input from the community as well as the local aldermen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I noted that Atlanta just passed ordinances that limit where data centers can be built in the city and state, not near the Beltline for them or MARTA rail stations. But they also expressed concerns that data centers cut down on walkability of areas because they are, dense structures as opposed to something that might have a courtyard or setbacks or anything like that.
Well, we've incorporated.
You can take a look at, again, depending on how the developer wants to proceed with this development, you could either go horizontal or vertical. And if taking up a lot of land is an issue, that's what's really good about this ordinance. It allows a lot of flexibility in making sure that local participation, the aldermen, will still have a say as to what's constructed. And listen, you talk about walkability. take a look on the south and west sides where there's thousands of empty lots. We're trying to get these, we're trying to get some economic activity property back on the tax roll so that way we're not having to pull the levers that we've traditionally had to pull in order to create revenue, which are property taxes, increase in fines, increase in fees, and TIF sweeps. We've got to find new revenue. We've got to demonstrate, quite frankly, to the country that we're open for business. And I think this sends a signal that data centers are a component of construction activity that we want to see in the city of Chicago.
And let's talk about that kind of activity, some of the advantages of having these facilities in the city, because I, again, with people not really knowing much about what's inside these buildings, you get the feeling that it would just be a whole bunch of machines. And so are the jobs only in construction?
No, I can speak to that. So there are many levels of jobs. One of the interesting things about data centers and the growth of technology, there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal recently that talked about the hybrid nature of employment in data centers. It's really a merging of blue collar and white collar. But what you also see, and this article really talked about it, was you don't necessarily need a four-year degree or a two-year degree. You know, there are roles for individuals that want to work with their hands, an electrician, a plumber, right, that works once the facility is stabilized, because oftentimes you have closed loop water systems. You may have liquid cooling. Obviously, you use quite a bit of electricity. And what I've often said is, listen, in our economy, we have individuals that want to work in front of a computer. We have individuals that want to work with their hands. We have to think of ways to identify jobs that will support that. And furthermore, when you look at the South Side and the West Side, employment. I grew up here. I remember when the steel mills were humming on the far southeast side, when the factories, right? I just heard yesterday there were 750,000 jobs in manufacturing in 1975. Many of those individuals are folks that I looked up to when I was a kid that had great employment. I'm not saying that this ordinance is going to replace all of that, but whether it's a U.S. Steel site, whether it's my site, or the tons of vacant land on the south and west sides and other parts of the city, we have to re-envision how to recreate an economy for our city. You know, we're not going to magically snap our fingers and bring back industries that have gone, but we need to be leaning in. And what Alderman Villegas said, we're open for business. We want people viewing Chicago as a place that's fertile ground for opportunities. And I'll take the last point I'll make is, listen, it is a sad commentary. I'm the only African-American in a city as great as Chicago to be doing a data center development. Part of that is it's very expensive. You know, we've invested a substantial amount of capital. But more importantly, if they don't see it, and I'm talking about our kids, they won't want to be it. And so I should be one of many. And this ordinance will support that no differently than 25 and 5 under Harold Washington helped build some very successful African-American Latino construction companies. This has the potential to create an incentive that can open a floodgate of opportunity for firms that right now are not participating.
Could it be that that the other because I mean, there are other African-American developers and Latino developers in the city. Could it be that everybody's watching you to see how well it goes?
It feels that way at times. It feels a little bit like Jackie Robinson, right? I said the first usually ends up with the arrows in the back, and then the second may end up with the towns named after them. But it's okay. I mean, listen, I enjoy the opportunity to break through. I'm just excited that our city is a place where we can do this. And we have leaders such as Alderman Villegas that have the vision to understand that we have to think of new ideas because, again, taxes, increasing property taxes, TIF sweeps, fines, fees, we can't do it. There are a lot of people in the city that are hurting and struggling, and we can't continue to put more burden on folks that are feel like they're barely making ends meet.
Gil Villegas, talk to me about the outlook for this, though. Is there evidence that the big companies will accept these kinds of, if not restrictions, although the one restriction is do it in the United States. Obviously, a lot of companies are going to want to do that anyway. Or are they going to gravitate toward areas that don't have any kinds of restrictions? How do you keep it from being a deterrent to business coming here?
Yeah, so these businesses, these hyperscalers, Amazon, Google, Oracle, you know, they're in the for-profit business. And so when you have an opportunity to take advantage of an incentive, what we're hoping is that they'll take a look at it and say, hey, you know what? There's an opportunity to save and secure contracts because we want to get these, we want to get these incentives in order to put us in a better position to win the contracts from the city of Chicago. So that's what we're trying to accomplish here. If they decide not to locate here, then we'll hold the CIO and the chief information officer and the chief procurement officer responsible to making sure that there's some type of local participation. Again, we have this asset of data. And what we're seeing is the hyperscalers are deciding to store our data. We're the third largest city in the country, store our data in Kentucky, Indiana, Iowa. These are right to work states where energy is cheaper. And what we're doing is we are putting ourselves at a disadvantage by not requiring some type of local residency requirement. And we're actually stimulating the other states around us with economic activity. So we want some of that economic activity here locally so we can do two things: invest in areas that need investment, but more importantly, help plug the $982 million deficit that we're facing. And then there's even more deficits that are coming. So we've got to begin to take bites at this apple to create new revenue. And this does it.
What is your hope for how many jobs might be created by this industry expanding here, and how much revenue you envision or hope for?
Yeah. So the construction jobs are the short-term jobs that will take place. And they'll be primarily union jobs. Then I would also add, this would be an opportunity again for the local aldermen to require some local participation as well. Again, exposing minority and women to the building trades to afford them an opportunity for a good middle class. These data centers employ 8 to 10 people. So they're not big job generators after they're built, but there are ancillary businesses that are associated with it. So you have to have servers cleaned. And so you have cleaning businesses that come in and have to dust the servers to make sure they're there. There's all types of maintenance that's required. So there's jobs associated with that. You know, we think that these could generate about $13 million per location over time. And, you know, we're potentially hundreds of millions of dollars over the next decade. But it just depends on how aggressive we want to be as a city to send a message that, hey, we want people that are storing our data to invest in our city. It's very easy that the administration can send that message to Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Oracle, you know, the hyperscalers, and let them know we want local participation. I would also mention that the state has some incentives as well. So again, the state and the city are very serious about growing this economy because we see there's a huge opportunity here, given our proximity to water, proximity having nuclear plants within the state of Illinois. We're an exporter of energy. I mean, we're really ripe for this type of development.
And absolutely, I agree.
You go.
I would also add that it really depends on the user. You know, if it's Microsoft, they'll have employees going in and out. You know, the way we have to think about this is it's almost like relocating a Fortune 500 company to a part of your city that they might ordinarily not look at. And I think the incentive encourages the participation, particularly of minority women-owned businesses, in ways that, frankly, I don't believe is happening in the burbs. You know, there have been 21 new data centers approved since 2020 in the state of Illinois. 19 have occurred in the suburbs of Chicago, Elk Grove Village, places like that. 2 were downstate. So if we look at the 19, you know, 19 have occurred. Only 4 of the 19 have occurred in Chicago. And so you begin to say Chicago has an economy that really is significant to the Midwest and certainly significant to Illinois. If we're the driver, why aren't we capturing more of that spend? The city of Chicago's annual IT budget, right, is over is close to a half a billion. And when you add sister agencies, it easily exceeds that. And so if we're driving all this economic activity, shouldn't we capture, you know, City of Chicago employees are required to live in the city. And we know that has an economic reason. Why shouldn't our data also be required, some of our data be required to live in the city as well?
Alderman Villegas, you're the one who will be chairing the hearing later this week. Tell me what your prediction is for this going forward.
Well, listen, like I said before, what we've done is put it out there. I heard some concerns from my colleagues. We begin to address those concerns. Like I've often said, Craig, you know, when I'm trying to solve for a solution, I introduce an ordinance. That's my idea on how to solve the issue. I still got to get 25 other people to agree with me. So I feel optimistic.
And we will be covering it as the week goes on. I would like to thank Alderman Gilbert Villegas and Craig Huffman of Metro Edge for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dellamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few, but if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Well, here's something you probably didn't think about today: data centers. But they probably have a lot to do with your work and your life, and a Chicago alderman is spearheading an effort to give them an even greater connection to Chicago. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Dellamore, and this is At Issue. When you're on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop computer and store data in the so-called cloud, it does not go to anything remotely cloud-like. The data have to be stored in brick-and-mortar buildings filled with high-tech equipment. And 36th Ward Alderman Gilbert Villegas wants more of those buildings and a lot more of the data here in Chicago. Alderman Villegas is a former Marine who now chairs the City Council Committee on Economic Capital and Technology Development, and he is proposing a measure that would add some requirements for companies storing data from Chicago. And Gil Villegas, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Craig. Thanks for having me, and thank you for covering this topic.
Well, it's an important one. Your proposed ordinance is called Data Residency Requirements for City Data. Well, why don't I let you explain what that means and what the ordinance would do?
No, absolutely. Well, again, thank you, Craig. So this ordinance takes advantage of an asset which we have, which is called data. So we have we pay hyperscalers like Amazon, Google, Oracle. We pay them to store our data. But there's not a requirement as to where they store it. And so the ordinance does a couple of things. Number one, it talks about best practices of storing data in the United States. You know, we're, you know, internet is worldwide, and what we want to do is make sure that our data is stored in the United States of America, number one. Number two, it provides an incentive for those hyperscalers to store data here locally within the state of Illinois and within the city of Chicago. So what we're doing is trying to encourage development of these data centers within the state of Illinois, but preferably within the city of Chicago, so we can do two things. We can help develop blighted areas or areas that have swaths of land that have gone undeveloped for a long time, and then bringing those data centers and putting them on the tax roll so we can create new revenue based off property tax that these buildings will sit on. So we're doing two things. Using data as our asset to get the revenue, and then we're providing an incentive for that. So it's not like we're telling folks to, you know, build these facilities without type of incentive. We're providing an incentive because we know that this data is valuable, and we would never allow construction to take place without having local participation. We wouldn't allow other things to occur without having some type of local participation. And what we're seeing is that this practice is happening in Europe. And so what we're doing is just mirroring what Europe's doing. We're mirroring what Loudoun County, Virginia is doing, where they've seen their property tax revenue go from $100 million to $1 billion based off the construction of these data centers.
And let me make sure, just clarify here, because the way the ordinance reads, you did specify, but it sounds like the only requirement is that the data be stored in the United States. And the everything above that, whether it comes to the state of Illinois or Chicago, it's basically a credit, right?
Correct.
So how does that credit work?
Yeah, so what happens is, so we're going to put out, we will procure the services of data storage. And if a hyperscaler wants to take advantage of the incentives, what they'll do is they'll store it within the state of Illinois or the city of Chicago. And what we're trying to do is create this market that there is an incentive tied to it. So it's 2% for the state of Illinois, 4% for the city of Chicago. Once that contract has expired and we put out another RFP for storage of data, those folks that have taken advantage of the incentives will then have the ability to leverage that incentive for their next procurement. So they'll be able to capture the 4% if it's in the city of Chicago or 2% in the state of Illinois in order to outbid the second low bidder if they're a little higher.
Now, we're joined by another guest. He's Craig Huffman. He's the co-founder of Metro Edge. I believe that is the only Black-owned data center developer in Chicago. And Craig Huffman, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And now, is this a growth industry? You know, we know that these centers exist, but I don't think people know much about them. So what is happening in this industry? Why would anyone want to be a developer?
Absolutely. Great question. You probably will find that you're hearing a lot more about data centers. The pandemic accelerated the adoption of new technologies. But to answer your question, data centers are the hottest real estate investment asset type in the world. There's a reason why some of the largest private equity investment firms such as KKR, Blackstone are pursuing these investments. It partly relates to the fact that retail has slowed down. Office, certainly in Chicago, has slowed down, and other real estate investment types.
So what kind of buildings are good for this? Explain what's inside these buildings.
Absolutely. So first and foremost, you can't just put a data center anywhere. Some of the opposition has tried to say, well, you don't want a data center next to a school. We agree. You don't want a data center next to certain kind of uses. What goes into a data center is a lot of equipment, very expensive equipment that's used to transmit data, right? I compare it to an airport. The runway allows airplanes to take off. It allows airplanes to land. And so when you think of it that way, the building really houses the connectivity that allows the whole network that becomes the internet, becomes email, becomes all the things that we use to really be connected. And so as a result, you know, this is now part of the infrastructure that we all depend upon. We're using a data center right now to conduct this interview. And I'm sure if you're using your smartphone, you're also using a data center. So this is interwoven into all aspects of our life. We just don't realize it because it's the back-end infrastructure that supports what we all are so dependent on.
Before I ask anything else, why wouldn't you want it near a school?
Yeah, I think it comes down to zoning. I mean, industrial real estate is typically sites that are zoned for industrial. So think of where our manufacturing, our businesses used to be. These are properties that historically have been designed with a single purpose, not to be aesthetically pleasing. Although what you're beginning to see now as you look at urban data centers, they look more like office buildings. And, you know, more importantly, on the point you made, to determine where a data center goes, You can't easily put a data center in a high density area. Why is that? Because you need access to power. You also need fiber. And ideally, you want to be in a place that is not going to be disruptive to a community.
I want to bring Alderman Villegas back in. And now at this point, we're talking to both of you. Alderman, what kind of a pushback are you getting from your colleagues on the city council? I know you've got a one of your committee meetings coming up this week on Wednesday, but there are some concerns.
Yeah, so I think the concerns are from the fact that the original ordinance was just a little confusing. So what we did was we worked closely with the administration to make it easier to comprehend and take a look at what is it that we're currently doing so that way it's in line. Initially, the ordinance had 6%, 8% as of an incentive. Some of my colleagues were confused about that. So I had the procurement department give us some language that made it a lot easier, which is in line with other incentives that we provide for other contracts. So we did that. Number two, we had an issue, some concerns around the environment. And so the city of Chicago, the sustainability officer has worked in the past with the Department of Planning to put forward recommendations around new development, inclusive of data centers, to make sure that we're taking into account the environment and sustainability. So in this ordinance, you'll see Section 2, which talks about the creation of a sustainability interdepartmental working group, so that way we can continue to build off the sustainability measures that we put forward through the Department of Planning in conjunction with the sustainability officer. So this is, again, this ordinance will continue to evolve as technologies evolve, as we get cleaner energy. Those things will be taken into consideration as we move forward with developing these data centers.
Yeah, and Craig Huffman, let's talk a little bit about energy, because I think people would assume that these kinds of facilities draw a lot of power. And you can tell me if they also, you know, have any kind of output, if there's either heat coming off of them, or what are the environmental concerns? What are the energy consumption concerns?
Yeah, well, as it relates to Chicago, ComEd has done a phenomenal job. ComEd actually exports power to neighboring states. And so you first have to start, is your grid in a good place? On the East Coast with Dominion and certain other providers, that's not been the case. But more importantly, yes, you do need power. And so one of the interesting things about the site that I'm looking to develop, it's been vacant for 40 years. If you go back in the history of the Illinois Medical District, at one point in time, what now is a district with some of the largest hospitals was comprised of homes. And these homes, while they didn't use a lot of power individually, there was a lot of density that when you add up. And so why is that relevant? Because that once those homes were demolished to create the medical district, you literally had power that went dormant because it became vacant land. And so one of the pieces is you need to be able to put a data center in a location that won't disrupt other users, which means you the ComEd looks and says, hey, we can provide 20 megawatts, 50 megawatts, while also providing the level of service that all of the other users need in the community. And, you know, as far as heat, you know, look, in Chicago, we're all looking for heat when it comes to January, right? The idea is, the other good news about data centers is that they have evolved and become very environmentally friendly in terms of the design, looking at ways, you know, even if you look at the Psi Quantum on the far southeast side, that's quantum computing. It's going to use a technology that will influence data centers that ultimately will be less reliant on power. And so what's fascinating about that development, that's the future of what data centers will look like. And what we're seeing a flash of is they're probably going to use less power. So some of the issues that we're beginning to talk about are short-term versus long-term. But more importantly, again, ComEd is an exporter. So as it relates to Chicago and the regions that ComEd oversees, it's not a problem, right? We've heard people saying, are my lights going to flicker? The answer is no.
But let me ask another concern that it just occurred to me as I was doing the research for this. Is there any concern that data centers could be terrorist targets? And what made me think of that is I was looking at a center that's in Europe that Google uses. And there's a big sign on it that says Google Cloud in front of the building. It seems to me that if someone wanted to disrupt a network, they might. I mean, how high a security would you need at a facility like that?
It's a great question, but I'll tell you, the word you just used, cloud, is the key. The cloud is comprised of many data centers, oftentimes a cluster. So if one goes down, there's redundancy. There's backup, right? That's the beauty. If you go back 10, 15 years, yes, a bomb goes off, blows up your data center, you're out of luck. Today, with groups like Amazon, Google, some of the largest hyperscalers in the world, this has been solved. You know, even with this ordinance, we have said, look, we're saying some of the data should be, but we're not going to tell, the ordinance is not going to tell Google or others how to run their business. We're just saying there's an economic development component associated with the building that is part of a network that makes the cloud. Mm-hmm. And as it relates to City of Chicago contracts, we think, we know the city certainly needs to think about revenue with the budget deficit looming. And this is a way to do it. And it's a way to do it without fines, fees, taxes, and harm to residential property owners or commercial property owners. A rising tide lifts all boats. So our belief is at a time when office is difficult to get done, retail is difficult to get done, there's a reason why data centers are being invested in. Let's ride the winning hand and promote economic development, particularly for areas that haven't seen it inside Chicago, and leveraging the data that residents, frankly, comes from the residents, and the money that pays these contracts comes from residents as well.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and we're talking about the push for data centers in Chicago and why they could matter to you. My guests are Chicago Alderman Gilbert Villegas, who chairs the City Council Technology Committee, and Craig Huffman, whom you just heard there, the founder and CEO of Metro Edge, a development company. Gil Villegas, before we get into the economic development parts of this, do you have any concern about something that Craig Huffman talked about or touched on, and that is how these data centers look? Because certainly the earliest ones look like big concrete boxes and very few design elements, and they just look like, like I said, big blocks of concrete.
Yeah.
Do you worry about the aesthetics of these things going up?
No, I don't, because there would be some zoning changes that are required. And so it'll be collaboration with the aldermen as well as the community if they decide to move forward with locating a data center within their wards. So, technology continues to evolve. And so what you've seen is the initial, square box, but there's been a lot of redesigns to make it more aesthetic and make it look like a fabric of the community that it's in. Again, outside is, it's just a building with servers inside. That's what a data center is. And so if the alderman or woman decides, hey, I'd like to have the outside be brick to match the aesthetics of the community, that can be something that's required. But I'm not concerned about that because there'll be a lot of input from the community as well as the local aldermen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I noted that Atlanta just passed ordinances that limit where data centers can be built in the city and state, not near the Beltline for them or MARTA rail stations. But they also expressed concerns that data centers cut down on walkability of areas because they are, you know, dense structures as opposed to something that might have a courtyard or setbacks or anything like that.
Well, we've incorporated.
You can take a look at, again, depending on how the developer wants to proceed with this development, you could either go horizontal or vertical. And if taking up a lot of land is an issue, that's what's really good about this ordinance. It allows a lot of flexibility in making sure that local participation, the aldermen will still have a say as to what's constructed. And listen, you know, a lot, you talk about walkability, take a look on the south and west sides where there's thousands of empty lots. We're trying to get some economic activity property back on the tax roll so that way we're not having to pull the levers that we've traditionally had to pull in order to create revenue, which are property taxes, increase in fines, increase in fees, and TIF sweeps. We've got to find new revenue. We've got to demonstrate, quite frankly, to the country that we're open for business. And I think this sends a signal that data centers are a component of construction activity that we want to see in the city of Chicago.
And let's talk about that kind of activity, some of the advantages of having these facilities in the city, because again, with people not really knowing much about what's inside these buildings, you get the feeling that it would just be a whole bunch of machines. And so are the jobs only in construction?
No. I can speak to that. So there are many levels of jobs. One of the interesting things about data centers and the growth of technology, there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal recently that talked about the hybrid nature of employment in data centers. It's really a merging of blue collar and white collar. But what you also see, and this article really talked about it, was you don't necessarily need a 4-year degree or a 2-year degree. You know, there are roles for individuals that want to work with their hands, an electrician, a plumber, right, that works once the facility is stabilized, because oftentimes you have closed loop water systems. You may have liquid cooling. Obviously, you use quite a bit of electricity. And what I've often said is, listen, in our economy, we have individuals that want to work in front of a computer. We have individuals that want to work with their hands. We have to think of ways to identify jobs that will support that. And furthermore, when you look at the South Side and the West Side, employment. I grew up here. I remember when the steel mills were humming on the far southeast side, when the factories, right? I just heard yesterday there were 750,000 jobs in manufacturing in 1975. Many of those individuals are folks that I looked up to when I was a kid that had great employment. I'm not saying that this ordinance is going to replace all of that, but whether it's a U.S. steel site, whether it's my site, or the tons of vacant land on the south and west sides, and other parts of the city, we have to re-envision how to recreate an economy for our city. You know, we're not going to magically snap our fingers and bring back industries that have gone, but we need to be leaning in. And what Alderman Villegas said, we're open for business. We want people viewing Chicago as a place that's fertile ground for opportunities. And I'll take the last point I'll make is, listen, it is a sad commentary. I'm the only African-American in a city as great as Chicago to be doing a data center development. Part of that is it's very expensive. You know, we've invested a substantial amount of capital, but more importantly, if they don't see it, and I'm talking about our kids, they won't want to be it. And so I should be one of many. And this ordinance will support that no differently than 25 and 5 under Harold Washington helped build some very successful African-American Latino construction companies. This has the potential to create an incentive that can open a floodgate of opportunity for firms that right now are not participating.
Could it be that that the other because I mean there are other African American developers and Latino developers in the city. Could it be that everybody's watching you to see how well it goes?
It feels that way at times. It feels a little bit like Jackie Robinson, right? Yeah. I said the first usually ends up with the arrows in the back, and then the second may end up with the towns named after them. But it's okay. I mean, listen, I enjoy the opportunity to break through. I'm just excited that our city is a place where we can do this. And we have leaders such as Alderman Villegas that have the vision to understand that we have to think of new ideas because, again, taxes, increasing property taxes, TIF sweeps, fines, fees, we can't do it. There are a lot of people in the city that are hurting and struggling, and we can't continue to put more burden on folks that feel like they're barely making ends meet.
Gil Villegas, talk to me about the outlook for this, though. Is there evidence that the big companies will accept these kinds of, if not restrictions, although the one restriction is do it in the United States. Obviously, a lot of companies are going to want to do that anyway. Or are they going to gravitate toward areas that don't have any kinds of restrictions? How do you keep it from being a deterrent to business coming here?
Yeah, so these businesses, these hyperscalers, Amazon, Google, Oracle, they're in the for-profit business. And so when you have an opportunity to take advantage of an incentive, what we're hoping is that they'll take a look at it and say, hey, you know what? There's an opportunity to save and secure contracts because we want to get these incentives in order to put us in a better position to win the contracts from the city of Chicago. So that's what we're trying to accomplish here. If they decide not to locate here, then we'll hold the CIO and the chief information officer and the chief procurement officer responsible to making sure that there's some type of local participation. Again, we have this asset of data, and what we're seeing is the hyperscalers are deciding to store our data, we're the third largest city in the country, store our data in Kentucky, Indiana, Iowa. These are right-to-work states where energy is cheaper. And what we're doing is we are putting ourselves at a disadvantage by not requiring some type of local residency requirement. And we're actually stimulating the other states around us with economic activity. So we want some of that economic activity here locally so we can do two things: invest in areas that need investment, but more importantly, help plug the $982 million deficit that we're facing. And then there's even more deficits that are coming. So we've got to begin to take bites at this apple to create new revenue. And this does it.
What is your hope for how many jobs might be created by this industry expanding here, and how much revenue you envision or hope for?
Yeah, so the construction jobs are the short-term jobs that will take place, and they'll be primarily union jobs. Then I would also add, this would be an opportunity, again, for the local aldermen to require some local participation as well. Again, exposing minority and women to the building trades to afford them an opportunity for a good middle class. These data centers employ 8 to 10 people. So they're not big job generators after they're built, but there are ancillary businesses that are associated with it. So you have to have servers cleaned. And so you have cleaning businesses that come in and have to dust the servers to make sure they're there. There's all types of maintenance that's required. So there's jobs associated with that. We think that these could generate about $13 million per location over time. And, we're potentially hundreds of millions of dollars over the next decade. But it just depends on how aggressive we want to be as a city to send a message that, hey, we want people that are storing our data to invest in our city. It's very easy. The administration can send that message to Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Oracle, the hyperscalers, and let them know we want local participation. I would also mention that the state has some incentives as well. So again, the state and the city are very serious about growing this economy because we see there's a huge opportunity here, given our proximity to water, proximity having nuclear plants within the state of Illinois. We're an exporter of energy. I mean, we're really ripe for this type of development.
And
absolutely, I agree.
You go.
I would also add that it really depends on the user. You know, if it's Microsoft, they'll have employees going in and out. You know, the way we have to think about this is it's almost like relocating a Fortune 500 company to a part of your city that they might ordinarily not look at. And I think the incentive encourages the participation, particularly of minority women-owned businesses in ways that, frankly, I don't believe is happening in the burbs. You know, there have been 21 new data centers approved since 2020 in the state of Illinois. 19 have occurred in the suburbs of Chicago, Elk Grove Village, places like that. 2 were downstate. So if we look at the 19, you know, 19 have occurred. Only 4 of the 19 have occurred in Chicago. And so you begin to say Chicago has an economy that really is significant to the Midwest and certainly significant to Illinois. If we're the driver, why aren't we capturing more of that spend? The city of Chicago's annual IT budget, right, is close to $500 million. And when you add sister agencies, it easily exceeds that. And so if we're driving all this economic activity, shouldn't we capture, you know, if city of Chicago employees are required to live in the city, and we know that has an economic reason, why shouldn't our data also be required, some of our data be required to live in the city as well?
Alderman Villegas, you're the one who will be chairing the hearing later this week. Tell me what your prediction is for this going forward.
Well, listen, like I said before, what we've done is put it out there. I heard some concerns from my colleagues. We begin to address those concerns. Like I've often said, Craig, you know, when I'm trying to solve for a solution, I introduce an ordinance. That's my idea on how to solve the issue. I still got to get 25 other people to agree with me. So I feel optimistic.
And we will be covering it as the week goes on. I would like to thank Alderman Gilbert Villegas and Craig Huffman of Metro Edge for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket, alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.